How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing really well.
What's going on, Jen? What's new?
Not too much. It's just been really snowy and cold, just like normal. Hasn't changed much.
We have been off school. We had a half a day Monday because of ice, and we got out, and we were off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I know.
And back Friday, and then we're off tomorrow for the holiday. And we have another great big snowstorm coming, so it looks like we might get a few more days off.
Yep.
And so far, fingers crossed, our district is not making us do virtual teaching. Instead, they said the year's been tough enough and enjoy a snow day.
Well, good.
That's a good thing. But that could change. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Yeah.
And I want to apologize for not having an episode out last week with the low pressures coming in. Means Jen gets really bad migraines. So all weekend long, Sunday I was out, most of Monday I was out. And then by then it was too late for us to get it recorded and to have Nico ready for your listening pleasure. So my apologies. And we try not to ever let that happen. But sometimes
it's out of our control, Jennifer. We can't help the weather.
But anyway, we're back now and we're ready for action. What do you got for us?
This is a what, Jen? It is.
Dinger.
I don't even know if that's a real word. I guess it is, because it is in my world. Today, we are headed to San Diego, where a 911 call comes in from a woman who is speaking in a muffled voice, barely understandable. The operator is able to understand that someone's hurt at a hotel in the town of Fallbrook, which is located in the northern part of the San Diego County area, for those Californians listening. After the 911 operator calms the caller down, he is able to get an address and police are dispatched to the location. Officers arrive and knock on the hotel door. They can hear noises coming from inside the room, but they're unable to make out just what is making the noise, and for that matter, if it's even human, right? It's just some bizarre noises, shall we say. The manager gets his keys and he lets officers inside. Inside the hotel room, they find a woman on the ground and blood is everywhere. The woman's barely alive, clinging to life. She has very little clothing on, sort of a lingerie set, I guess would be the best way to describe it. And there are obvious signs of injury. They look all around the room and there is a spiked dog collar, but the kind that humans wear, you know, like a spiked dog collar, punk rock or otherwise, near her body.
Yep.
In the bathroom, there is an array of knives and even scalpels. The woman had huge gashes on both sides of her neck. Both of her wrists had been sliced and she was bleeding from her inner thighs. The woman, barely clinging to life, is taken to the UC San Diego hospital while investigators continue to examine the hotel room. At this point, it doesn't really look like she's going to make it. Now, as they're combing through the room, they notice a note, which is rather odd, to say the least, hanging from a hanger. You know, in the hotel rooms, how they have the laundry bag with the little clippies on it? So the note was clipped by the clips hanging from the hanger, okay? I know.
Clips on clips, hangers by hangers.
You know what I'm saying, right? Like, it's just a little fancy there. So the note immediately jumps out at them because at the top of it, it says, "Pigs, read this," with an arrow pointing down to the ground.
Oh.
Okay. There is a handwritten note, and the note is detailing the murder of another woman near Lake Skinner. It's informing the officers, basically, that there's another woman who was murdered, and they need to go to Lake Skinner, and once they're there, they will be able to locate her body. Now, perhaps this is fake or just a game or whatever, but police obviously need to check it out. And so some of the officers split up and they leave to go see if this letter's true or just some sort of sick game that these people are playing. Once they arrive at Lake Skinner, the police are greeted by one of the park employees who is frantic to tell them that he thinks he found a body, a dead body. He leads the officers to the location, which is right off the road of a deep embankment. The body was that of a young woman dressed in nothing. I think she had a sock on, but she had no, other clothes on. She had marks on both of her wrist as well as her neck, indicating that she had been tied up and possibly choked. Her eyes showed signs of petechia, which is the petechia hemorrhaging from when a person is choked to death and the blood vessels kind of pop in their eyes. She also has two small dots on her neck. At this point, it reminded me of like a vampire bite, but it's not, obviously, because that's where my mind goes to, because... Vampires.
Yeah.
But officers kind of wonder that maybe if this is from a stun gun or a taser gun or some sort of electric burn placed on her neck. Since there was not any blood at the scene, it was believed she was killed elsewhere and just dumped here. The woman has a small tattoo on her left arm that says Eileen. One of the detectives on scene believes this may in fact be the missing person that had just come across his desk a few days prior by the name of Brittany Kilgore, because 22-year-old Brittany had a tattoo just like this.
She had a tattoo of the name
Correct.
Eileen on her
as
arm?
As does this
okay.
yet to be named unidentified body. Investigators do not yet know how the bleeding woman in the hotel and the murdered Brittany Kilgore are connected, but they soon will find out because, amazingly, the hotel victim would survive her gruesome injuries. The woman would tell detectives a story that would be, let's say, bizarre, to say the least. And I mean, bizarre.
Bizarre.
Woo, strange.
I like bizarre. Bizarre's
it's
good.
All kinds.
Bizarre, not humdinger. Bizarre, right?
Yeah, but they're both. It's a bizarre humdinger. Let's put it that way, right? So a little bit about Brittany. Brittany was married, but her marriage at the time is kind of falling apart. She was married young to a young Marine, and the marriage was not a solid one. The couple married very young, and in fact, the two had agreed to go their separate ways. Police talked to her husband, because why, Jen? Always the husband's one of the first suspects, right?
Right. It's usually the spouse, right?
It becomes apparent right away that he had nothing to do with her death, and he was extremely upset. He also had a solid alibi, and he would have been unable to commit the murder of Brittany. Officers then head over to the hospital to see what they can learn from the mystery woman who was found near death in the hotel. They learn her name is Jessica Lopez, and she is a 28-year-old woman from Fallbrook. Her injuries are pretty severe, and she's on a lot of medication, so a lot of what she's saying isn't kind of making sense, but, you know, the officers, they try to get as much information from her as they can.
Well, I'm sure she's in shock also.
Her story has some holes in it, but she was able to give them a few vital key bits of information. You're going to die. This is just, I'm telling you what. Mm-mm-mm. Jessica tells officers that she lives with a woman named Dorothy Marigelino. And I hope I'm saying that right. I'm not a linguist, Jen. Dorothy is a 41-year-old woman, and she's also about 6 months pregnant at this time.
Oh, God bless her, man.
No.
Can you imagine?
Oof. Her boyfriend and father of her soon-to-be newborn is a 49-year-old staff sergeant in the Marines named Luis Perez. Now, although the couple is not married or even living together, Luis spends most of his time at Dorothy's house. Jessica rents a room from Dorothy. Dorothy likes things very much in order. So much so, she has little notes. This would drive me crazy. She has little notes all around the house reminding people how certain things should be done. Oh, if you know me and if you know Jen, this is so not like us. It's shocking. But little things. So she had little post-it notes on the bar stool saying how far the bar stools needed to be pushed in and to remain away from the bar.
No.
Silverware should be placed in a certain way, facing a certain direction, certain, you know, in a certain order. Just little post-it notes all around. Toilet paper, which way the toilet paper should go.
If she was my roommate, you'd be doing a podcast on me and her. I can't take that.
It's very
too much
in
for
control,
me.
If you will.
Little
now,
anal.
Jessica, on the other hand, really likes pleasing Dorothy and pretty much does whatever Dorothy wants her to do. The two of them get along so well and are pretty close in this unique relationship, and how it works, I'm not sure. Now, on the pod, Jen, as you know, we always say, hey, if it works for you, it's right. Good for you. No judgment, right? Everybody to each their own, right?
Go for it. Yep. Mind your own business
and
do your own thing.
What, yeah, you're not hurting anybody unless you are, which is where this case brings us to. But you see, Jessica, Jen, is Dorothy's pet. That is to say that Dorothy is Jessica's master or handler, or Jessica is her pet.
Right.
Good boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The
yes.
lingo.
They have a BDSM relationship where Dorothy is the dom and Jessica is the sub. And if you don't know what that means, it's the dominant, dominating, whatever, and then the submissive, the one that kind of does whatever the dominant person tells you to. Jen, let me just say here, I hope I'm using the correct terms. If I'm not, drop me a line. Let me know. I did a little research on this. We try to make sure we use the, I don't want to say politically correct, but the non-offensive terms and the correct lingo for all our cases.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica tells officers that she knows Brittany, as they all four, Dorothy, Jessica, Lewis, and Brittany, had all become pretty good friends over this last couple weeks. The quad liked hanging out together and have a little bit of fun. Now, Brittany is trying to come out of her shell a little bit and make some new friends since she is pretty fresh from separating from her husband. Jessica tells officers that on that Friday, the day that Brittany disappeared, she knew that Lewis had went to Brittany's place to see if Brittany needed any help in packing things up since she was separating from her husband and would be leaving that apartment behind. So with this information, police now know that they need to have a little chat with the former Marine sergeant. And pretty much because basically he has been placed with Brittany on what could have been her last day alive. Lewis agrees to meet up with investigators at Brittany's former apartment complex. Now, this is the one that he went to help her move or see if she needed help moving.
Right.
Lewis pulls up to meet police, and it's clear his SUV has been doing some off-roading as his tires were caked in mud. Now, if you remember, her body was found kind of in near Lake Skinner in a sort of a remote area, which would entail your car to get a little muddy.
I would think so.
Now, Lewis, who lives at the Camp Pendleton Marine Base, told him that he had left base to collect firewood. That's why it was all messy. So the police are like, oh, okay. Yep, that sounds legit. But hey, let's go ahead and have a look in your back. Let's have a look in your car, shall we? Lewis agrees and opens the hatch. Inside is an AR-15 assault rifle. Now, this isn't strange, necessarily, since he's a Marine. And in fact, it is okay for him to have it, but only while on base. And you cannot just be, you know, cruising around town with an AR-15 assault rifle in your car. That's just not how that is supposed to go. With this information, this is all that they need to be able to search his entire vehicle. Right? Probable cause. At this point, things aren't looking so good for Marine Lewis. Officers find a bag with some empty lighter fluid cans, a stun gun, and latex gloves. The stun gun, The stun gun has two prongs on it, two prongs that would make an injury very much like the one that they found on Brittany's neck. Also,
it's
not a vampire. Mm-hmm. It's never a vampire. It's always a mannequin. No. Also inside the plastic bag are droplets of what look like blood. Lewis, you got some splaining to do, buddy. And while that explanation is not quite the one officers were expecting to hear, it's a story. Let's say that. Lewis explains that he enjoys an alternative form of fun with his pregnant girlfriend, Dorothy. Lewis tells them that while he was a Marine by day, he enjoyed a little bit of rough play at night. The couple enjoys it so much that they actually took Dorothy's basement and converted it into a sex dungeon. This is where a rabbit hole I got stuck in for about 2 hours, Jen. Don't judge. The dungeon featured many toys and devices, from leather whips to various machines that will do what you want in the form of pain and pleasure. While Dorothy and Lewis enjoy this lifestyle, mostly as doms, the couple brought in Jessica, who enjoys being submissive to them. Lewis tells officers that they enjoy consensual spankings, whippings, mutilation of each other's genitals, which would, on occasion, draw blood. However, it was all done with the permission of each other. The relationships were a bit on the more drastic side, violence-wise, but again, they're all consenting adults. They all agreed to do all this. Lewis tells police that Brittany had recently discovered the threesome's lifestyle, and while very interested and curious, Lewis maintains that Brittany was not an active participant with them. She was just a good friend, and they liked having her around. Lewis maintains that he did stop by to help Brittany pack up, and that was it. He just stopped by to see if he could help. He was happy to help her move, but on one condition. And that condition would be that Brittany would go hang out with him later on a dinner cruise in downtown San Diego. Brittany was excited to celebrate her freedom and jumped at the chance to have some fun. Lewis tells officers that he picked up Brittany and they were headed down to catch a cruise. But due to traffic, Lewis said that they wouldn't make it in time. So he suggested that they go to a bar instead. You know, knock back a few drinks. Lewis tells officers that he dropped Brittany off so that she didn't have to walk very far, and he went to go park the car. Lewis claims that when he got back to the bar where he had dropped her off, Brittany was not there. So he went inside and he started walking around the bar, couldn't find her. So he left the bar and he continued to walk in and around that area looking for her, thinking that, you know, he'd run into her, that perhaps maybe she just went to another bar, and no big deal. Lewis tells officers that after he couldn't find her, he gave up and went back to Dorothy's house. He says he stayed the night there, all night, with Dorothy. Police at this point are pretty sure that there's a lot more to the story and that Lewis and Dorothy know this, but they're not giving it up. They're not going to give up anything yet. A phone call comes into police that offers a bit of insight into this case. It seems that there is a camera above the hotel check-in desk where Jessica was attacked. And that video reveals Jessica was not alone when she checked into the hotel. Now, remember, Jessica is the girl that was found clinging to life on the hotel floor with the scalpel and all that stuff. In the video, there is a woman that is seen with Jessica walking up to the hotel desk to purchase the hotel room for the night. And that woman would be none other than Dorothy. So Dorothy was with Jessica when she checked her in. A hallway camera catches Dorothy walking down the corridor a few hours later after they had checked in, and it looks as if she's leaving the hotel. So, now we need to know just what happened in that hotel room and why did Dorothy not tell officers about this. Officers know that they need to keep digging, and they start with Brittany's cell phone records. Right away, officers notice that Brittany's phone is not pinging off any towers down in the bar area of San Diego, where Lewis had said they were. But instead, her phone is pinging off the towers in, Dorothy's neighborhood.
Huh, go figure.
Go figure, right? Police head over to talk to Dorothy yet again to see why she has been a liar, liar, pants on fire. And they decide to play it cool and not let her know that her pants are in fact on fire, Jen, because they know she has lied to them. She's a
dirty,
as you say,
liar.
Dirty liar. They begin by asking about Brittany and about their relationship. Dorothy, of course, is just shocked because she has been out of town and didn't even hear about Brittany until she got home. Okay, sure. What about your relationship with Jessica, Dorothy? Dorothy confirms that Jessica was her slave and the two of them had a binding contract with the rules written up between the two of them, and that was with Dorothy being mistress and Jessica being her slave. Dorothy tells officers that she has strict rules for Jessica to follow in her life, otherwise she'd just abide by the rules of herself.
What?
Yeah, control. Janet Jackson said it best.
I know.
So Dorothy has these rules of hers to follow. Mm-hmm. So, and these rules, well, here we go. These rules included what she wore, what she ate, when she could use the restroom, just to name a few. I mean, this was a moment by moment daily activities of what to do, when to do it, right? And Dorothy said, because otherwise she would just do her own thing, which is kind of normal, right?
Yeah, I couldn't be anybody's subservient at all.
In fact, that Jessica had a tattoo that said pet, and Jessica ate out of a dog bowl. Dorothy assures police that Jessica loved being her slave. Dorothy mentions that Jessica had been feeling somewhat jealous lately because of Brittany, and Dorothy wonders if maybe Jessica had something to do with Brittany's murder.
Huh, you think?
Let me just say this. Brittany was way cute, and I'm going to say that's it. And you can take what you want from that, okay?
She was like, thank God she's pretty type thing? Is that what you're saying?
No. She was really cute, and these other three were not.
Oh, got you.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what about that hotel video with Jessica and Dorothy? Dorothy tells them that she had to be on a plane at 5:30 in the morning that day, the next day or whatever. So she decided to get a hotel room for the two of them. And she claims that when she left early in the morning, everything was fine. She was simply leaving the hotel to catch her plane at 5:30. No big deal. Like, why drive back to her house, right? She was just going to stay there with Jessica. They were going to have a nice little evening. And then Dorothy would leave on the plane. Okay, time to go pay yet another visit to Jessica, who is still recovering in the hospital. This time, the police have a little bit more information, and they can make the questions more specific. More specific in the sense that her beloved Mistress Dorothy is framing her for the murder of Brittany Kilgore. Devastated by the betrayal, the answers start flying out of Jessica's mouth. Let's just say, when a woman is crossed, you know.
Hell hath no fury.
There you go.
Hell hath no fury.
I was hoping you would say that. Jessica tells investigators that she was not the only one with a bit of jealousy. Dorothy was not very happy with the younger and prettier Brittany getting all the attention from Lewis. It was Dorothy who came to Jessica with the plan to get rid of this little jealousy issue once and for all, and for both of them. The plan goes like this, Jen. Jessica and Dorothy will convince Lewis to take their sexual games to a whole new level, one that includes kidnapping, assault, and it's going to end with murder. Lewis will take Brittany to San Diego under the guise of going on a cruise. On the way there, Lewis pulls over and tells Brittany about the plan, hoping, you know, she'll be into it. So here's the deal, Brittany. You're going to come back to our house, and we're going to go to the sex dungeon. We're going to have a little fun. And either that or I'm going to kidnap you, assault you, etc.
Choices.
Brittany, she is not about that at all. So Lewis then uses that stun gun to immobilize her. He then takes Brittany to the sex dungeon. She is tied up to a device called a spider web. Looks like a giant web, hence the name. Just, you know, huge, like 6 feet tall. She is then gagged. Lewis approaches her and ends up strangling her to death. The three of them, and this is Dorothy, Jessica, and Lewis, attempt to cut her out of the spider web by dismembering her.
That seems like there'd be an easier way to do that, but okay.
You'd think, right? These three brainiacs soon find out it's not quite as easy as it seems like on TV. This is where the wrist and neck marks were found on her because they had tried to cut off her head and her hands, which is gruesome and terrible, and it failed, obviously. With this failing, they decide to wrap her up in a carpet and take her body out to dump it, while slave Jessica stays behind to clean up the mess. Jessica, really?
Well, she's the little pet, right? She's doing what she's told.
I draw my line at that. I would have to renegotiate my binding contract.
I'd draw my line at all of it. There's no way.
True. The two then drive back to Dorothy's house, where Dorothy gets Jessica. Now, here's where the story gets even weirder, as if it hasn't been so far. Once at the hotel, Dorothy makes Jessica write that letter about the body, which was Brittany's, and how it was dumped in Lake Skinner. After the letter was written that implicated Jessica herself in the murder of Brittany Kilgore, Mistress Dorothy had one last demand. And Jessica, ever the loyal slave, would do whatever Dorothy wanted. even if it meant to kill herself. Jessica climbed in the bathtub, armed with a scalpel, and she attempts to cut her wrist, not working so good. So then she goes for her neck and tries to slit her own throat. However, what Dorothy didn't count on was a last-minute regret by Jessica. Jessica, bleeding and dying, climbed out of the tub and attempted to make it to the door, but the loss of blood was too much. That's why she collapsed right there on the carpet before reaching the door. If police had not arrived exactly when they did, she would have bled out and it would have been mere moments. And this would be an altogether different episode.
That's horrible.
Dorothy, Jessica, and Lewis would all be charged with Brittany Kilgore's murder, and they would each receive a life sentence. And they're still in prison today.
Good. Out of all the ways to try to kill yourself, to slit your own throat.
So, yeah, let's talk about a few things here. In that binding contract, this is part of the rabbit hole I went down for those of you that need senseless trivia like myself, and that I always say if there's ever a trivia night that has all my, like the Cliffy Clavin Cheers episode, if you know what I'm talking about, people out there, the useless information things, we go down the rabbit hole all the time. But the binding contract, some of these are like 40 pages long, and it's from every little detail of what you wear when you wake up, how you sleep. I mean, just some very controlling things, okay? And that was the contract that Jessica had signed. So when Dorothy asked her to do that, she wanted Dorothy to be happy. So the plan was Jessica would kill herself, then police would find her dead with that letter, and the police would, assume or figure that Jessica had, in fact, killed Brittany. And right. So Jessica would make Dorothy happy forever. And thank goodness Dorothy changed her mind and couldn't go through with it, but almost did. I mean, it was pretty brutal, pretty bad stuff. And that's why Dorothy left, because this was all planned out, that they would take her to the hotel. That's why Dorothy was with her, take Jessica in there. Jessica would kill herself. That letter would say, you know, I guess her taking blame for Brittany Kilgore's death. Pretty brutal, pretty horrible. Just odd. Dorothy was 6 months pregnant, so she ended up giving birth in prison, obviously, and the baby is not with her, of course. So that is the case of Brittany Kilgore.
Jen. Wow. Horrible.
Well, so on another note, going down that rabbit hole, you know, there's a whole market for this stuff out there.
There is. I mean,
just toys and things and...
See, like, I knew you were on Amazon buying toys.
Well, I was just thinking, like, honestly, you have to have a little bit of money to spend, too. This is not a cheap little hobby. I mean, you can't use the same, what do you call that thing? The thing with the leather strap things that hit horses with it, I think. What's that called?
A whip?
No. Nope. It's got a name. Can't use the same thingy all the time, I guess, right? Like, you've neat new toys. I can't think of it.
You've got the lingo down, that's for sure.
I wrote this a while ago. I wrote this like over a month ago, but... Also, on that note, funny, not funny, but it is a comedy. On Netflix, there's a show called Binding. I absolutely love it. I saw the first season, I think it was about a year ago, and the second season just came out. And of course, I watched it all before noon on a Saturday, because that's what I do. But the episodes are only like 20 minutes long or something. But It's honestly, it's just cute. It's kind of fun. It's kind of funny. Not that this, it's just the time.
What's it about?
It is about a young girl, and she is trying to get money to go to graduate school. So She decides to investigate and become a dominatrix. And then her friend, who is gay and cute as a button and reminds me of our friend Trent, he's kind of got the strawberry blondish red hair And just super funny, super cute, super awkward in the sense that, like, he talks when he's not supposed to. It's super cute. It's funny. It's a good mindless thing to watch. And yeah, so check it out. It's called Binding on Netflix.
Awesome.
And it's interesting. I mean, not one for the little kids to watch. You know what I'm saying?
Obviously, but if it's about a dominatrix, I wouldn't think that you'd want to sit your kids
but there's
in front
no,
of it.
There's just interesting stuff.
Well, while you're thinking, I just finished the Cecil Hotel. It could have been 1.5 episodes instead of 4.
I found the history of the hotel and the history of LA at that time way more. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I
do
too.
The
conspiracy theorists piss me off. I'm just going to say that.
Just get it out there, Jen.
I don't understand it. My mind doesn't think about that. When it first happened, I thought it was maybe she either took drugs or somebody slipped her drugs. But then when her tox report came back, that I knew it was some kind of mental break. But it just the whole thing was just made me aggravate. It just aggravated me. And then the one guy who had another man go to her grave at the very end. Did you see that part? That's creepy. Come on. Well, that's creepy.
I'm not going to say. I mean, the guy didn't
even know her, and he just sent another man. No, that's just wrong.
I think too, it lost me with the, and I don't want to give anything away here, but the tuberculosis, and then the screening test for the tuberculosis disease is called the Lyme ELISA, ELISA or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm out. I can't. What? Like, what does that have?
The whole vigilante, like the that morbid guy, where all the people.
Were so mean to him,
and
right?
Called him a murderer, and were just the guy tried to commit suicide for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Come on, people. There's one thing to be a web sleuth, but there's another thing to just take it too far. And they took it too far. Shame on them.
You know as well as I do, when people are behind a keyboard, they say and do things that I guarantee they wouldn't do to your face. And that
it just it made and. I never really paid too much attention to the case because I always thought it was a mental break. I didn't really think that there was this big thing with the police were covering up and, you know, and these people were getting so mad that the police wasn't sharing the reports with them. Why would they need the report? They don't need the report. It's none of their business. Mm-hmm. It just, the whole thing aggravated me.
I concur. Another show you want to check out because I'm trying to stay light these days. And it just came out yesterday. And of course, I finished it yesterday. Buried with the Bernards. It made me laugh out loud a couple times. Okay, so there's this family in Memphis, and they're one of the drive-through window funeral parlor where they have a giant window and you could drive. So it's them, but they're just cute. They are cute as can be. So it's Grandma, crazy Uncle Kevin, and then Ryan, who's supposed to be the big boss, but he's not, and then his two daughters. It's just cute. It just made me laugh, and it's again an easy watch.
Go ahead.
They run a funeral home. So it's kind of.
This isn't the funeral home that does like a little diorama with the deceased, correct?
No.
Okay.
No. This is the just where they open the casket and there's like a great big picture window and you can just drive through and do your.
Gotcha. That's got to be booming during this pandemic.
I didn't even think about that, Jen.
Yeah. Seriously. That's probably the way to go.
It was just kind of nice. And it's not really about death or anything. It's more about the family and them like fighting. And it's just funny. It just made me good. It was a nice little Saturday morning binge watch. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. The only other thing that I caught up with, it was The Night Stalker. Finally got a minute to sit down and watch it. And I enjoyed it. It was good.
I liked that too. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I have to laugh at all the people online that were saying it's way too gruesome or it's just way too dark. Hello, people. His name was the Night Stalker because he killed people and stalked them in the night.
He was a horrible man. I mean, he was scary. I remember him getting caught. I remember all of that because we were 15, 16 years old.
I don't even think I was born yet.
Yeah, right. But, you know, the thing that bothered me the whole thing, and this is the way my 50-year-old brain goes. At the beginning, was it Gil Corello, the main sergeant, the main detective? They showed him at the beginning and I'm like, oh, look at him. He's so awkward and chubby and everything. And then they showed a picture of him now. And I'm like, the only thing that went through my head is why do men get better looking as they age?
Right. Thank you.
And the whole time, that's all I thought of the whole time was like, damn it. Look at that.
Well, you never hear, oh, wow. Look at Cam. She just looks so distinguished now that she's older. You don't hear that.
I know.
You don't. Look at that gray coming in on the sides of Jen's hair. She just looks so good,
well,
gray.
And then there was the reporter that pissed me off because the one that had the used the bribe about, well, we've got the footprint information, the shoe print information. If you don't give us something, we're going to run with the shoe print information. That pissed me off too. But the one newscaster, they like showed her and she's like this older woman. And then they showed her, you know, as it was in 85. And I'm like, oh, she was cute. And I'm like, damn it. Look at me. What am I doing? She was just as attractive as an older woman. I don't know.
We are too, Jen. We are too. I just, you know, yeah.
I don't know. It was a good documentary and I enjoyed it. And if honestly, since he wasn't tried for raping those children, I kind of forgot that he did that.
Yeah, I did too. I did. Because I did too. Which is the worst of the worst. And I love, I don't want to give anything away, but I love how he got caught.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy chasing him through the neighborhood. Could you imagine?
Oh, no. He deserved every bit of it. They should have pummeled him to death.
Amen.
But I would have been okay. Yeah. Thought it was a great documentary. I really did. I wasn't.
Yeah, I liked it too.
I didn't want to watch it at first because sometimes you just get.
It's dark.
Too tired of. Especially when you do this and you're researching cases and you're watching these docs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we probably will never cover him because he's too big. But it's just like, I already know what about. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened mm-hmm. and everything. But I'm glad I did because, like I said, I totally forgot that he abducted kids from their home and raped them mm-hmm. and then set them free.
He was and stunk. He just looks like he stinks, too.
He does, doesn't he?
Did stink. Ugh.
And then, what is wrong with the women that are attractive?
That is what I was just going to say. I was just going to bring that up.
Ugh. Bugs me.
Well, this is what I like. I was screaming at my TV. Because that one blonde lady who might have married him, I can't remember. And they said, well, what do you like about him? And she says, I quote, he's just really kind. And I'm screaming, you are not kind if you brutally murder and rape people. Kind is the one thing you are not. You can be lots of things. Kind is never in that description. Never.
And then
ever,
one of them
ever.
Said, well, you know, girls like bad boys. And I'm like, he's not bad. He's evil. There's a difference. There's a
bad boy is the one that smokes in the high school bathroom, right? Maybe skips school once in a while. That's a bad boy. That one right there is a Satan worshiping serial killer. Big difference.
He's evil.
Big
he's
difference.
Pure and simple evil. And I don't know. But I was just like, whatever. People,
he's
I tell
kind.
You, I don't understand them. They're
he's
weird.
Kind.
I don't like half of them. So,
except for all our listeners, you like
oh,
all
our
them.
Listeners are fantastic.
For the most part, just kidding.
They're awesome. All right. Well,
so
that's all I've got
that's
for this
it,
week.
That's all I got, too. But until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Again, let me just say, what was that?
I have no idea. What was that?
It's a freaking ghost. I'm telling you, I'm hearing things on the heaters again. I'm not kidding you. And what better way for ghosts to talk to me than through the white noise of the heater? Just saying.
It could have been from my
end,
know. Too. Because I
okay,
heard it.
So it's
I heard
not
it.
Just me.
It's getting kind of, never mind. I forgot where so I was going to go with it. Cut that, Reggie.
Cut that, Reggie. Cut that, Reggie. And Nico. Both
I
of
know.
You. Cut it. The couple enjoys it so much that they actually took Dorothy's basement and converted it into a sex dungeon. This is where a rabbit hole I got stuck in for about 2 hours, Jen. Don't judge.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I know you well.
The dungeon featured many...
Are you... Making new
no,
plans
thank
for your
you.
Basement,
I just didn't know what
chance?
Some of these things were, and I had to look them up. And then I got,
sure,
you know,
you didn't.
I was like,
then you ordered
just
them
say,
off
I wrote,
Amazon,
I,
and the rest is history.
Was reading and researching this at home, thank goodness, because if I had to do this at work, I probably would have got tagged and maybe fired because, you know. I already said that. Okay, sorry. Yeah, hold on. Form it, plain and pleasure. Sorry, Nico, and I'm scrolling.
Scrolling. Get this script a rolling.
I just don't. I'm a baby. I could never do this. But anyway, I could probably beat somebody. I could be a dominatrix. I'd probably do that. I couldn't be the other one. Anyway, back to the story.
I don't think I could do either.
I don't know. I think getting frustration out on people. I don't know. I think it might be pretty good.
I have them too.
Yeah, you can't spank them and then say, "Oh, are you okay, buddy?" You can't do that. I think that's frowned upon.
I can't do it.
Okay, back to the story. Mutilation of each other's genitals, which would occasionally draw blood.
Their genitals. You said that kind of funny. Genitals. That's okay.
I'll say it again, Jen. Lewis tells officers that sometimes I just try not to giggle, and I don't mean to, but the word spanking just makes me laugh. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Okay. Really?
Right? God damn it. If I say right one more time. You know what? I need a taser gun, and you know what? I'm going to get one. I'm going to get a dog bark collar, and every time I say this on the podcast, from your house, you're going to hit a button that's going to shock me.
Okay, but that means I'd have to pay attention.
Thank you.
I'd have to listen when you'd speak.
No more rights. I'm gonna pinch myself. You know what? I'm going to get a rubber band on my wrist and, like, ding it at myself every time.